is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, and pleased to be with you. Well, I guess it was inevitable. We talked how long ago was this? Back in May. Actually, this is a story that's been going on for some time in Wisconsin. This is all about the Koch brothers and Scott Walker. I keep telling you, Scott Walker is going to be the Republican nominee because he's got the billionaires behind him, and everything else is sideshow. Because he will do exactly what they want. Now, you know, Jeb Bush, maybe, but I just, well, I'm predicting this, and I've been telling you that Scott Walker has the policies of Ronald Reagan, but he has the political instincts of Richard Nixon. And today, that really came to the top. Now, let me tell you the backstory first. Back on Friday, May 22nd, in Mother Jones magazine, Pema Levy, P-E-M-A Levy, L-E-V-Y, wrote an article titled, How Scott Walker and His Allies Hijacked the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And I'll just share some pieces from this. The Wisconsin Club for Growth. Now, these clubs for growth are heavily funded by the Koch brothers all over the country, among other billionaire groups. But it's the clubs for growth. They're principally, I believe, the Koch brothers' vehicle. The Wisconsin Club for Growth and the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, which is the state's largest group of corporations, business group, have spent more than $10 million since 2007 to elect a conservative majority to Wisconsin's top court. Now, in 2007, there was a liberal majority on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Wisconsin has historically been a blue state. But they just poured all this money in. And this is where it gets really interesting. First of all, the Wisconsin Club for Growth and WMC didn't make direct contributions to the campaigns. Instead, they did what super PACs do. They poured, quoting Pema Levy, instead they poured millions into so-called independent issue ads that clearly conveyed messages that supported these campaigns. And in an odd twist, due to lax recusal rules, well, I'm going to get to that in just a second. Okay. So Jeanine Geske, who was a Supreme Court justice on the Wisconsin Supreme Court from 93 to 98, said this large amount of money in special interests has impacted the workings of the court. Here's how it played out. In 2007, these groups, Wisconsin Club for Growth and WMC, spent, according to this article, an estimated $2.9 million on ads backing conservative candidate Annette Ziegler for an open seat on the Supreme Court and attacking her opponent. Total spending on the election topped $5.8 million, four times more than had ever been spent in a Supreme Court race in Wisconsin. The following year, she writes, the same group spent more than $2.7 million on ads aimed at unseating sitting Justice Lewis Butler, a liberal, and electing conservative candidate Michael Gableman. The election was so nasty, the racially tinged ads released by Gableman's campaign were compared to the infamous Willie Horton ads. In 2009, to put a stop to this, okay, the conservatives have now got two hardcore right-wingers on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, but they need two more in order to take over the court. And in 2009, the legislature passed a law, it was called the Impartial Justice Act, that said, you can't do this anymore. You can't come in and buy our Supreme Court justices. It set up a campaign finance system specifically for Supreme Court elections, which included a matching funds provision for candidates to counter negative ads against them, as Pema Levy writes. But in 2011, 4 years ago, Governor Walker quietly repealed the public financing law with language tucked into his first budget as governor, which opened the way for the Koch brothers to come in or through their front group and buy the next two Supreme Court justices. Now, the question, why would they be interested in buying these Supreme Court justices? Because the Supreme Court of Wisconsin was preparing to take down Scott Walker. We'll get to that in just a moment. In spring of 2011, Pema Levy writes, conservative dark money groups, which can take in unlimited donations without disclosing where their money comes from, once again poured money into a Supreme Court race in Wisconsin. in the midst of statewide upheaval over Walker's Act 10, the Act anti-union bill. The Wisconsin Club for Growth and WMC spent an estimated $2.5 million backing Prosser. He's David Prosser. He's the right wing candidate for the Supreme Court, for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. They spent $2.5 million. Prosser's own campaign only spent $700,000. He won by a margin of only 7,000 votes. So, you know, I think he can thank the Koch brothers and the $2.5 million for his seat on the court. So now they've got four right-wing justices on the court. And one of those justices is being investigated for coordinating with one of these groups, presumably Wisconsin Club for Growth, maybe the business group, in a campaign violation. But here's where it gets interesting. Scott Walker is being investigated for the exact same thing, or at least his campaign is. Several people have actually already pled guilty. I mean, they've been convicted of this. And this John Doe investigation, which is highly secret, was about to go to the Supreme Court, or had gone to the Supreme Court just recently. So here today, the story comes out. The headline, Wisconsin Supreme Court halts John Doe probe against Walker. This is from the Associated Press. The Wisconsin Supreme Court has handed Republican presidential hopeful Scott Walker a major victory by ending an investigation into whether the governor's 2012 recall campaign coordinated illegally with conservative groups. The case revolves around political activity by Wisconsin Club for Growth during the 2012 election. This is the recall election. I don't know why the headlines are written the way they are. I saw this over at the New York Times, too. What the headline should have been was four right-wing justices on the Wisconsin Supreme Court elected by the Wisconsin Club for Growth, the Koch brothers Wisconsin Club for Growth, just shot down an investigation into whether Scott Walker had illegally coordinated by the Wisconsin Club for Growth. I mean, that's what just happened. I'm telling you, this guy may make it all the way to the White House. Meanwhile, the Koch brothers are having a new summit. This is August 21st and 22nd. It's called the American Dream Summit in Columbus, Ohio. The gathering is sponsored by the organization bankrolled by Charles and David Koch, writes Daryl Rowland for the Columbus Dispatch. But the governor of the state in which the meeting is being held, it's being held in Columbus, Ohio, and the governor of Ohio is John Kasich. He will not be there. And here's where it gets really interesting. Politico did a piece about this, and there was this panel, and John Kasich was on it, and I'll just read from this article by Daryl Rowland. At one point, according to accounts provided to Politico by two sources present, Randy Kendrick, a major contributor, and the wife of Ken Kendrick, the owner of Major League Baseball's Arizona Diamondbacks, said she disagreed with Kasich's decision to expand Medicaid coverage in Ohio and questioned why he'd expressed the view that it was what God wanted. The governor's response was fiery. He said, "I don't know about you, lady," he said as he pointed at Kendrick, his voice rising, "but when I get to the pearly gates, I'm going to have to answer for what I've done for the poor." Politico said the exchange left many stunned. About 20 audience members walked out of the room, and two Republican governors also on the panel, Nikki Haley and Bobby Jindal, told Kasich they disagreed with him. The Ohio governor has not been invited back to a Koch seminar since. Kasich, you know, just by speaking ethically, you know, it's really just the former slave states and Wisconsin, to the best of my knowledge. Now, you know, please reality check me on this if I'm wrong on this, but I believe it is just the former slave states and Wisconsin, whose governor needs the former slave states to become president of the United States, who have refused to expand Medicaid. Medicaid expansion that would only benefit working poor people, who in those former slave states are an awful lot of people of color.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
But we've got more. We've got Birdie versus Walker, and David Hochberg is going to be here in the second hour. We're going to talk about Medicare. It's going to be an interesting day. Stick around. And welcome back. William in Marengowan. I know I'm mispronouncing that, Louisiana. How do you say it, William? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Yes, Marengowan. It's good. I think you're absolutely right, Tom, about Scott Walker being their fellow, you know. But I wanted to ask you, I remember I was watching the program a while back, and you said how the Koch brothers and Soros had walked into Senator Cory Booker's office and dropped a bunch of money on him.
You didn't hear that on this program. I'm not familiar with that story.
Oh, okay. Anyway,
sorry. I don't know anything about that.
The Koch brothers and the Soros had met with Cory Booker. So I wonder if they're trying to make him a vice president or secretary of state. But if you don't know anything, maybe I got it confused. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and Cory Booker is a Democrat, isn't he?
He is, you know. But, sometimes they switch up when they get enough money.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
He could be on Hillary's ticket, you know.
Oh, he could be. Yeah, my sense of Cory Booker is that he's basically what they call in the media these days a middle of the road Democrat. I would call him a corporate Democrat. Solidly part of the establishment. He's a reasonable guy. I mean, he's promoted some good policies, some good progressive policies, and at times he just goes along with the establishment. So, but that's how you get to be, a senator. You go from being a mayor to a senator. So, but I'm sorry, William, I can't speak to that. I don't know the details of it. Thanks for the call, though, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. Doug, watching Free Speech TV in Burley, Idaho. Hey, Doug, what's up?
What's up? The President of the United States from two points of view. I'll go serious first. I'm in hopes that at his news conference he said yesterday that he wishes that all the Republicans would read that agreement.
Right, the president said that. Yes.
And then item two and maybe item last. I was on another news station about two stations down from Free Speech TV, and they were running a bottom line, and the bottom line was saying Chris Christie was entertaining about suing the president for the Iran agreement.
Yeah.
So why doesn't Barack Obama turn the tables on Chris Christie for the countersuing for the treatment?
There's a backstory to that, Doug. Chris Christie is freaked out that he's not going to be one of the 10 people picked for the Fox debate because he's polling so low right now, and because it's a nationwide debate. Nationwide polls will determine who's going to be in the debate. Chris Christie has a fairly good nationwide profile, but it's not a positive one. He's trying to make headlines that will endear him to Republicans, and suing the president over Iran is something, so this is all about trying to get into the Fox debate, all of them. This is why Rick Perry went to kiss Donald Trump's ring or butt or whatever he kissed. Given Rick Perry, anyway. It's all about trying to get on that debate stage. So we'll see how it plays out. Doug, thanks for the call. We'll be back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. The other thing that I find interesting is how the Republican Party has basically become a racket. I mean, you've got people in the Republican Party who are running for president, not because they actually intend, not because they even think they have any chance at all of becoming president. Carly Fiorina, I mean, she couldn't even become senator from California. She's got no chance. But she's trying to burnish her brand, right? Ben Carson, no chance. I mean, he's a Fox News phenomenon. In fact, he's a regular on Fox News, and this is, outside of people who watch Fox News, most people have no idea who Ben Carson is. I didn't till a month or so ago, but he's been a retired surgeon. He's an African American, and he's a right winger who loves to say things pretty bad, pretty nasty about Obama. And so over on Fox News, they're just embracing him. And so Fox News set up what looks to me like a scam. Now, there's all these scams going on in the right-wing world, right? If you have signed up for any of the Republican candidates, you know, if you've given any of them even $3, even $5, you're on the list. And the list gets sold from group to group to group to group to group, right? So that you'll be buried with emails and phone calls and letters and things asking you for money. In some cases, by the candidates. And as Stephen Colbert, you know, pointed out back years ago when he started his super PAC, remember that? Stephen Colbert started a super PAC, and he had his lawyer on, and he said, okay, you know, we're going to raise $1 million for a super PAC. If I lose the election, what happens to that $1 million? And the lawyer says, you get to keep it. Or words to that effect. I mean, there are some slight restrictions on it, but, you know, Sarah Palin has been playing this game. She raised, I think, what, $20 million for her super PAC? When she wasn't even running for anything? It's like, this is, it's a scam. And there's also a whole bunch of right-wing scams of, you know, save the veterans and, you know, stop Iran and help Israel. And there's just, there's a whole bunch of them that have been outed. I mean, there's this, MediaMatters.org did a great piece back in December of 2012. And the title is Conservative Media One Big Racket? And it really is. So you've got all these hustlers, but now Fox News comes along with the ultimate hustle. How does Fox News make money? Selling advertising, right? And so, and you know, one of the problems that they have is that their demographic is, you know, the average age of people watching Fox News is in the neighborhood of 70 years old. And so the advertisers that they get are not the high-priced, you know, fancy-schmancy advertisers. Instead, they get ads for, you know, the modern-day equivalent of Geritol for things like, you know, catheters and Viagra and whatnot. So what they need, you know, they'd love some more national advertising, right? So they say to the Republicans, you know, it used to be New Hampshire and Iowa and South Carolina and Super Tuesday in the South, they picked the front runners for the Republican presidential nomination. And everybody agreed that that was kind of a cool thing because Iowa and New Hampshire, are, in addition to being relatively conservative states, so it's appropriate for the Republicans, are also small states. This would be like if the Democratic primary was first in Vermont, you know. But the Republicans got ahead of this game, right? And they basically run the game. But as small states, the candidates can do retail politics. They can actually show up, shake hands, get to know people, make their case, and that's a reasonably good filter. But Fox News said, okay, you know, there's 20 people running for president on the Republican side, declared and undeclared, or as yet undeclared. And we're only going to have 10 of them on the debate stage. And the 10 we're going to pick are the 10 who have the highest numbers in the national polls. Now, why did Fox say the national polls rather than the polls in New Hampshire and Iowa? Because the candidates now have to reach the national audience of Republicans. And there's really, you know, only two ways to reach the national Republican audience. The least effective is to buy advertising on right-wing talk radio. I mean, it's effective, but it's not as effective as the most effective, which is to buy advertising on Fox News. So you've got, you know, these candidates like Chris Christie who are way back in the behind. And Chris Christie now is, you know, beating his chest saying, I'm going to sue President Obama over this Iran deal. Really? He's only doing it to get in the headlines. Rick Perry, the former governor of Texas, and kind of, you know, verbal stumble bum, way behind in the polls, very little chance he'll be one of the top 10. So what does he do? He makes a very public announcement that he's going to kiss Donald Rump's, Donald Rump's Trump. And does so, right? And he goes and he meets with Donald Trump, and Trump is like, I don't know why he wants to see me. I mean, it's nice that he wants to see me, but I don't know why. I'll tell you why he wants to see you. He wants to get his face on national television. He wants to be interviewed on Morning Joe. He wants to, which he was this morning. He wants to be all over Fox News because he's come to the realization that no matter how many trips you make to Iowa and New Hampshire, it's not going to get you in the debate. And the Fox News debate is the first debate. Now, the Manchester Union leader has rolled one out 3 days earlier, but that's, you know, it's going to be relatively inconsequential. Probably because Fox won't cover it, you know, or they won't cover it the way that they're going to cover their own debate. They're going to promote their own debate. So what are these candidates doing now? They're super PACs are starting to buy advertising on Fox so-called news. It's a scam. The whole thing is a scam. Mike Huckabee wants to sell books and raise his speaking fees. John Kasich wants to get reelected governor of Ohio by looking presidential. It elevates your stature. Half these people are not seriously running for president. Now, the Donald Trump candidacy raises a whole other really interesting issue about billionaires in politics. We'll get to that right after the break, and we'll pick up your phone calls.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
It's also Anything Goes Summer, so if there's anything on your mind, feel free. We'll be back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. I misspoke. Let me correct myself. It wasn't Rick Perry who went to kiss Donald Rump's Trump. It was Ted Cruz. There are so many of them. I can't keep them straight. And they're both from Texas. So, but see, Rick Perry is playing the same game. He's just doing the other side of it. Rick Perry and Ted Cruz are both in a situation where their national polling numbers are so low that they won't get into the Fox scam debate, and so they needed to get themselves in the headlines. So Rick Perry got himself in the headlines by attacking Donald Trump, and Ted Cruz got himself in the headlines by kissing Donald Trump's butt. And you know, but both of them, the strategy was identical. Right? The strategy was just identical. Which is try to get national press so that you can get your poll numbers up, because it's really all about name recognition these days. As I demonstrated in the last segment, I can't even remember. Yeah, I can't even keep all these people straight. And I'm not a Republican. You know, knock 20 points off my IQ, and you're gonna, you know, I shouldn't say that about Republicans. My dad was a Republican, and he was smarter than I am, and a good man. Anyhow. This whole thing is just amazing. It's just amazing. The scam that is going on I think the Republican Party has basically disintegrated because it's been taken over by billionaires. I mean, you got billionaires who just stacked the Wisconsin Supreme Court so that the prosecutor who was investigating whether those same billionaires were committing a crime with Scott Walker would be, you know, the prosecution would be stopped. And not only stopped, according to the Center for American Progress, the court ruling saying that they wanted to prevent the chilling of otherwise protected speech required that the prosecutors, and I quote, this is from the ruling of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, now that there are four right-wingers on the court put there with money from the Wisconsin Club for Growth, you know, one of the Koch brothers' PACs, they ordered that the prosecutors who were investigating Scott Walker, quote, permanently destroy all copies of information and other materials obtained through the investigation, end of quote. I'm telling you, Scott Walker is Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon got to be president by committing treason. Lyndon Johnson had worked out the details. Why don't you get that clip and let's play it. Lyndon Johnson had worked out the details of an end to the Vietnam War in 1968. His vice president, Hubert Humphrey, was the nominee of the party and was running for president. And LBJ knew, and Richard Nixon knew, who was running against Humphrey, that if LBJ and Hubert Humphrey could end the Vietnam War before November, before Election Day, then Humphrey would win. Right? I mean, the anti-Vietnam War sentiment was huge in the United States. And LBJ had worked out a deal. And then Nixon and his people contacted the South Vietnamese and said, don't go along with that deal. We will make you personally rich, and we will give you a better deal if you just wait until after the election. In fact, here, and the CIA caught the wiretap of it. There's an article about this in Salon today that I wrote. You can read it. It's also on Alternet. It started on Alternet, and Salon picked it up, salon.com. It's titled, you know, something like, you know, you can expect the GOP to try to torpedo the Iran deal because they've done it before. And this is referring to the Jimmy Carter situation. But with Nixon, because, you know, we're talking about Scott Walker here, we're talking about Richard Nixon. This, you know, when LBJ learned that Nixon had contacted South Vietnam and said, just hold off until after the election so that Hubert Humphrey will lose and I'll become president, and I'll make you guys rich and I'll give you a better deal. He called up Everett Dirksen, who was the leader of the Republicans in the Senate and an extraordinarily good man. He was my dad's kind of Republican, Everett Dirksen. And a man of high ethical standard. They named one of the Senate buildings after him. Democrats loved him as well as Republicans. LBJ calls up Everett Dirksen and has this conversation.
Here's the latest information we got. The agent says that they just talked to the boss in New Mexico.
Uh-huh.
And that he says that you must hold out. Just hold on until after the election. We know what Chu is saying to them out there.
Yeah.
We're pretty well informed on both ends. Now, I'm reading their hand, Everett. I don't want to get this in the campaign.
That's right.
And they oughtn't to be doing this. This is treason.
I know.
And you know, LBJ basically was working with Everett Dirksen to try to stop Nixon, and Dirksen kept calling him back saying, you know, He's ignoring me, or he's saying that he's not actually doing it. He's denying it. Nixon actually called LBJ at one point and denied it. These tapes were only released a couple of years ago. But anyway, this is so Scott Walker basically doing the same thing. I mean, you know, if this win elections by any means necessary. Anyhow, I said it's anything goes summer, and a bunch of calls on hold. Thomas in Flint, Michigan. Hey, Thomas, what's up?
Hey, Tom, I need your advice.
Okay.
I am going to be on my show at 4 o'clock in the second hour, going to be interviewing Sean McCutcheon of McCutcheon versus FEC.
Right.
And he's actually my very first real conservative interview.
Right.
And I need advice on how to stop the talking over and stop the and curb that without hanging up on him and without going completely crazy,
right?
Being rude to him. You know,
it's at a certain level, it's practice. You know, I would advise you not to worry about, you know, if it seems that, you know, you make your points, let him make his points, and let your respect your listeners enough to sort out the difference. Number one.
Sure.
Because, you know, very often these right-wingers come on and they make their points, and their points are so ridiculous that all the audience is going, what, is this crazy? And the right-wingers thinking, hey, I got my points out there. So, number one. And number two, if they try to do that whole Fox News thing, just say, you know, hey, let's not filibuster each other. I'll let you talk, you let me talk. Let's have a conversation. And if it doesn't work, then, you know, if you've got an associate producer like Shano here, you can always pot them down a little bit and talk over them. So
fair enough. My other question to you is, I'm going to be doing the interview on FYI Nation. You're actually an affiliate of ours.
Oh, great.
FYINation.com.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be doing the affiliate. Do you have a question that you would ask him or anything that comes to mind if you got him in the room to ask him?
Why do you think that very wealthy people should be allowed to have more influence in our electoral process than average working people?
Okay, awesome.
I mean, isn't that the core of the entire issue?
Yeah, totally. And because I know he'll go back to the free speech thing, and it just drives me nuts with that argument.
Right.
And I'm very pro Wolfpack and Move to Amend, anything to get money out of politics.
Right. But see, when he comes back and he says, well, don't wealthy people have free speech rights? I would say, yes, they do. But typically, wealthy people are wealthy because they also have business interests. And the rules of the game of business in the United States and pretty much all over the world are set by government. They're set by government policy. And so if business interests, if wealthy people who got wealthy through because of their business interests, if those business interests can gain control of or have significant consequential influence over the political process, then the interests of a very small number of very wealthy business people are going to be served, and the interests of the rest of the country and maybe even the planet, when we're talking about things like ecocide, you know, like global warming and whatnot, suffer. And you know, what's your solution for that, Mr. McCutcheon? I mean, you know, working people have an interest, but and they used to be represented by unions. There used to be, you know, a reasonable balance. You know, about a third of America was unionized, but now there's so few unions that working people really don't have a voice. And but the billionaires are you know buying the microphone. So you know, and they're buying the microphone. Not because they believe in some noble cause. They're buying the microphone because they want to get richer. They want to lower their own taxes. They want to reduce regulation on their businesses so that they can make more money. And, you know, I've got no problem with people making money. I got no problem with people making more money. But how about doing it in a way that doesn't harm the commons and that doesn't harm your workers? And if, you know, and repeatedly what we've seen over time throughout the history of this country is that when wealthy people control the political agenda, go back to the Lochner case in 1905, you know, the Baker's case where New York State had a law that said bakers can't work more than 10 hours a day or 60 hours a week. And it was, you know, it was to protect people from being worked to death, basically. And the bakery took this to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court struck it down, saying this is an unconstitutional interference in the right of an employer to negotiate with an employee. And struck down child labor laws, struck down right to unionize laws, struck down the minimum wage law. I mean, all of these things happened back then when big money was influencing who was on the court and who was in Congress. And that led to all kinds of abuses. And the Nixon era, again, all kinds of abuses. And so Teddy Roosevelt responded by passing the Tillman Act in 1907, which said that no corporation could give money to any federal candidate for office. That just got overturned by Citizens United just a couple of years ago. So, anyhow, I don't know if you'll have an opportunity to say all that. That's where I would go if I was interviewing Sean McCutcheon. Thomas, good luck. Good luck.
Thank you, Thomas.
Thank you. I wish you well. We'll be back. It's 15 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And I think those are actually the real questions that we as a nation have to come to terms with, because our democracy has been turned into an autocracy. Welcome back. Anita watching Free Speech TV in San Antonio, Texas. Hey, Anita, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Do you remember there were some shenanigans involved in that Supreme Court justice race that Prosser, I think his name was?
Yeah.
Remember, initially the Democratic candidate was declared the winner, and then all of a sudden those ballots were found that had been some Republican woman had operative, I think it was, she'd had him in her office, and she found him overnight, and all of a sudden he won.
Oh,
that
yeah.
That was so important because they were going to rule on his union busting.
Right, right, on his Prop 10 or whatever it was called, Article 10,
yeah.
Bill 10, yeah.
Right, and so I'm sure the Walker campaign had something to do with that because that was what that recall was all about.
So Kathy Nicholas was the Republican operative who found the votes. Is that what you're saying, Shana? Yeah, Waukesha County clerk. Interesting, yeah.
He found like 10,000 of them.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, he reminds me more of Karl Rove.
Well, I think Karl Rove and Richard Nixon are cut out of the same cloth.
Right, right.
You know.
Except, yeah, Karl Rove, I mean, Scott Walker, I think he is devious enough to do, and this is what scares me about him, to win that an election any way he can.
Yeah, and well, he's done it. Three times. You know, he's done it multiple times. I mean, it started when he was in college, one of the first ones that he lost, where his, you know, when the local newspaper endorsed his opponent, his campaign workers went out and stole the newspapers.
Right, and he's got all that money to back him up, and,
yeah.
you know,
and now
I'm
he's
sure
got the billionaires.
Ideology.
Yeah, I'm with you. Now he's got the billionaires. I'm very concerned about this. I'm very concerned that he might become our next president. And, you know, I guess the good news is if he does become our next president and he does put, you know, it does like a Sam Brownback thing or like he's done in Wisconsin and does Reaganomics on steroids, it will provoke a great crash. I mean, he will be Herbert Hoover, which will then lead to a political revolution in the United States, and we will get an FDR. The damage that will be done for 4 years, or maybe even eight, will be unimaginable. And, right. You know, it's just amazing. Thank you for reminding me of that, Anita. I had totally forgotten. Thanks for the call. Daniel in Dadeville, Alabama. Hey, Daniel, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
What's up? I just wanted to bring up a couple of things. One real quick, and then I'll
we have 1 minute, Daniel.
About the callers. You keep referring to them as wars. Only Congress can declare wars.
Right.
And
so World War II was the last real war that we had. I understand that.
Yeah, we had four. We had 1812, Spanish-American, and 1 and 2.
Right. And the Civil War.
And Korea was a political.
Right. It was called a police action.
Police action, yeah. So I do not call them wars.
Yeah.
I call them political invasions.
Oh, well, it's as good a term as any. Iraq, too. I mean, there was no declaration of war by Congress.
Yes. So I understand that even though they are warish.
Even though it looks like war, sounds like war, walks like war, talks like war, quacks like war, it's not war. Yeah. Daniel, I'll continue to refer to them as wars just because I think that's how most people understand them. But you are technically absolutely correct. Thank you for the call. We'll be back. It's 10 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. 10 minutes before the hour. During the break, one of our callers was Kathy. No, I forget the name. But in any case, one of our callers called and reminded me. I had completely forgotten about this. That David Prosser, one of the right wing justices on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, that just ordered all of the investigations into Scott Walker to be destroyed. That when he ran for election. With heavy, heavy, heavy backing of the Koch brothers, Wisconsin Club for Growth, that at first it was reported that he actually lost the election. And then Kathy Nicholas, who was the Waukesha County clerk, discovered, was it overnight? Overnight discovered something like 10,000 ballots that hadn't gotten counted. Oh, gee, look at this. Here's a bunch of ballots that weren't counted. Oh, my God. And the next day, suddenly, the right-winger is on the Supreme Court. I'm telling you, Scott Walker, Richard Nixon, Karl Rove, they're all the same person. Except that Karl Rove didn't look for his own political power. He just wanted, you know, the wealth and fame that came from being associated with power. Which I think strengthens my analogy between Scott Walker and Richard Nixon. Chris in Darlington, South Carolina. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hey, great program again. And
thank you.
Was having a thought about all these conservatives. I mean, they should be careful of what they wish for because they might get it. But every, looking back at 5,000 years of Chinese history, the one common denominator that every dynasty, including the current communist dynasty, has been terrified of is famine.
You're talking about the Chinese?
Yeah.
There was a huge famine in China in the 50s or 60s. I was a little kid when it happened. My mom used to say, eat all the food on your plate. There's people dying of starvation in China.
Yeah. But that's kind of what brought the communists to power over the Kuomintang in 49.
Right.
But, by extension, when people, even if there's no crop failure, you get enough Americans hungry, out of work, no prospects, watching their kids die of starvation because all the safety net programs have been completely done away with. And eventually it'll get to the point where, you know, hey, we got nothing to lose. We got a big garage full of assault rifles and ammunition that the NRA convinced us to buy when times were good. Let's go get those rich so-and-sos.
Yikes.
They've got food. Let's go take it.
Yeah, that's a pretty dystopian perspective. And here, let me add some fuel to your paranoia. And, you know, it's not, I'm not calling you paranoid, but I mean, to that scenario. Over the last couple of years, food production out of the Midwest has been declining because of drought. And in California, because of drought, it's starting to get really, really freaky. And California produces one quarter of all the food that we eat in the United States. And they are in a drought that nobody's ever seen before.
I mean, it's like totally off the edge. So, I think that there's something to be very concerned about there.
Chris, thanks for the call. Russell in Hickory Hills, Illinois. Hey, Russell, Walker would be a disaster for the Republicans. Russell? No, Russell. Matthew in Denton, Texas. Matthew, you're on the air.
Yes. Hello, Tom.
Hey.
I'm calling in about something about Bernie Sanders, actually.
Okay.
He'll be here in Dallas on Sunday.
Oh, really?
At 1 p.m. He's doing a barnstorm through Texas. He'll be in Dallas at 1 and Houston at 7.
Wow. Okay. I didn't know that. I've got a... So, you want to get the word out. So if you're in Dallas this Sunday, 1 o'clock, or in Houston this Sunday, 7 o'clock, and I'm guessing that you can find the whole schedule and everything over at BernieSanders.com?
You can, or you can come to our page, Denton for Bernie Sanders, on Facebook. We're
okay.
One of the main organizers for North Texas.
Oh, great. Denton for Bernie Sanders. Yeah, well, good luck with that. I wish you very, very well, and I hope you have a wonderful and successful event. Matthew, thanks for the call. Norma in Montgomery, Alabama. Hey, Norma, what's up?
Hi, Dr. Tom. When I'm listening to you talk about Scott Walker, first let me say, in my personal opinion, he reminds me of this whiny brat kid I knew that threw temper tantrums when he didn't get his own way and to the point where you gave in.
Yeah.
But... why don't these people in Wisconsin, oh, sorry, we've already mailed all that stuff to Loretta Lynch. You'll have to get it back from her instead of throwing it away.
Right.
I think that, I don't know what makes people think that he could win, because when he talks about doing things for the, so long as you don't harm your neighbor, please remember that the Koch brothers also make fertilizer, which goes real well with the GMO products, which does hurt us.
Yeah.
But no, Walker scares me, and I think that anybody that listens to him needs to be locked up or something. But Bernie Bernie will be doing a teleconference with people here in Alabama. It will be in Birmingham. They are going to have a live teleconference. You can look up Alabama for Bernie.
Okay.
And this will be on the 27th in different places in Birmingham, and they've got their own Alabama for Bernie group starting up now.
So he's coming in electronically to multiple sites in Birmingham, Alabama?
Yeah, at the same time on the 27th.
So people are having house parties and bars are going to flip the TV on to him and that kind of thing? Is that how it's going to work?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
And so people can learn about that how?
Alabama for Bernie. That's one of the sites.
Is that a Facebook site or is that a web page?
I pulled it up off of Google, and
okay.
There are about four or five different places. They had a big meeting the other night for Bernie where people came to see who was supporting Bernie and what they can do to get him to come to Alabama.
Right.
And so far as I'm concerned, Bernie's already won.
Well,
now we need to work on the senators.
I was watching MSNBC this morning while I was doing show prep. I just had the screen on without the sound, and they showed a graphic of who's raising the most money, and they attributed the $15 million that Bernie has raised to Martin O'Malley and the $2 million that Martin O'Malley has raised to Bernie. And I'm like, what? Is this Fox News?
You're listening to Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And in the studio with me is David Hogberg, Ph.D., healthcare policy analyst with the National Center for Public Policy Research, a conservative think tank. Nationalcenter.org is the website. And David has written a new book. It's called Medicare's Victims, How the U.S. Government's Largest Healthcare Program Harms Patients and Impairs Physicians. And you can find this on, you know, all wherever fine books are sold, right?
Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Lulu. Yeah. It's all online at this point.
Go. Okay, so David, tell me what's wrong with Medicare.
What's wrong with Medicare is that it is basically a political program. By that I mean that the people who are going to get good treatment on Medicare tend to be those who have political power, who can influence Congress to make changes in Medicare. And those that
Who are those people?
I'm going to get to that.
Okay.
And those who do not have political power often lose out and find themselves victims of Medicare. The people who have power tend to be the senior population, age 65 and older. They vote at rates higher than almost anyone else. So Congress is always looking to them and worried about their reelection chances. They're also, many of them live in retirement communities, belong to senior centers, so they're very easy to organize. And so Congress is going to craft Medicare policy in ways that please as many seniors as possible.
So you think that back in the 60s when Lyndon Johnson created Medicare as part of the Great Society, that he was doing it not to save the lives of elderly people who had no access to health care and insurance companies would not insure them because they were old and sick. He didn't do it to help them. He did it because he wanted votes?
He may have had both motives.
Okay. So what's wrong with having free or very, very inexpensive health care for our senior citizens? What's wrong with that?
The problem comes with the people who do not have political power, and oftentimes they are some of the sickest people in Medicare. And the reason they lack political power is that, well, number one, not that many people get seriously ill each year, so they don't amount to much at the ballot box. Given their condition, they are not going to be doing things like organizing, protesting, and so forth that can also push Congress to make changes in Medicare policy. And then some of them are so ill, they won't be around for the next election.
So can I rephrase that, and you can tell me if I've got it right?
Okay.
It sounds to me like what you're saying is that the small proportion of elderly people who get sick and don't get good services from Medicare, and your book is filled with anecdotes of people who got basically screwed,
mm-hmm.
People who the doctor didn't do a good job, the hospital didn't do a good job, the reimbursements were wrong, the funding wasn't there, the bureaucracy screwed up. Those people basically, because they don't represent the largest cohort of elderly people, if they protest, if they show up in Washington, D.C. with a sign or in front of or call their congressman or call their senator, their voice is not going to be heard as loud as the American Association of Retired Persons or a senior center in Miami with 5,000 people in it.
Well, I mean, many of them, never show up with a sign to protest Congress. In fact, the other problem is they may not even realize the extent to which Medicare has harmed them. I mean, you leave the hospital with a bad experience, you blame the doctor, blame the nurses, blame the hospital. You may be completely unaware that Medicare, played a role in harming you. And as such, if you're unaware of it, you're not going to be active on it.
So if I'm on Medicare, and I'm not, I won't qualify for it for another year, actually. I'll be 65 next year. But if I'm on Medicare and I feel like I got screwed,
mm-hmm.
I can actually call my senator or my congressman.
Sure.
And I can raise some hell. If I'm on UnitedHealthcare or Blue Cross Blue Shield and I try to call, and by the way, I've actually done this, and complain.
Mm-hmm.
I get laughed at. I get ignored. I get voicemail. I get nothing. So why would you say that we should take away Medicare from elderly people and hand them to the tender mercies of the for-profit insurance industry?
I didn't say that in the
book.
Okay,
so you want to reform Medicare.
I want to reform Medicare.
How so? You don't want to privatize it. You want to maintain it as a government program so that people actually can talk to their representatives. Because if I try, I've tried to call senior executives in health insurance companies.
Yeah,
and
but
they
with,
won't
but,
take
but,
the call.
With health insurance, though, I can always switch health insurance companies.
Once you're sick, well, you can't.
I have absolutely no ability to change under Medicare. And
you can buy any insurance you want.
And you can call your members of Congress, and they may not respond. Talk about Frank Alfisi in the book. His daughter Amy has been calling. He died due to Medicare's policies. She's been calling her and emailing her representatives and senators, and has gotten no response at all.
So there's
no guarantee you're going to get any response out of the government either.
Sure. What is the conservative solution for Medicare's for these problems that you've identified in Medicare?
Well, I won't speak for all conservatives. I'll only speak for my solutions. I start with the principle that I think beneficiaries should be in direct control of Medicare's resources. They should pay for the care directly using Medicare's resources. That way,
I don't know what that means.
How does it work? I'll explain it. And what that means is
that
patients and doctors will be deciding what treatments to try, rather than having to run into what Congress decides, what the bureaucracy won't allow, and so forth. And basically,
you don't want to do it the way that the insurance companies do it.
You mean like the Paul Ryan thing?
No, I'm talking about the like real insurance companies. I mean, all over the country. I mean, people get prescriptions or people get whatever, and the insurance company says, no, we're not going to pay for that. That's not on our list. I mean, Medicare does the same thing. You're saying that Medicare should stop doing that, but private for-profit insurance companies should not?
What does private insurance have to do here? I didn't write a book about private insurance here, Tom. I'm talking about Medicare here,
right,
and ways we can improve
it.
I mean, why are we harping on something that I didn't write about in the book?
Okay, well, reasonable question. Because if I'm going to abandon Medicare or if we're going to – well, okay, so you've said you don't want to privatize Medicare.
No.
So you change the rules for Medicare so that there's no longer a best practices, for example. I mean, this is basically what you're talking about.
Well, there
can
still be best practices that doctors can follow. It just won't be enforced by the CMS. So that
who's it enforced by?
Pardon?
Who's it enforced by?
By CMS.
What's CMS?
I'm sorry, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. If a doctor feels that the best practices are not what's going to best treat a particular patient, because, there's a lot of diversity among patients, and some are not going to respond to the standard treatment, it would be much easier for them to pursue an alternative.
And basically require Medicare to pay for it.
Yeah.
So what if the doctor is saying, hey, you've got cancer. We're going to give you intravenous vitamin C.
If the patient is okay with that, sure.
Even though that person might respond much better to surgery or chemo, that would be the appropriate...
I am going to trust the patients to make the best decisions because...
But patients don't go to medical school.
Hang on. Patients have the most skin in the game, by which I mean they are the ones who are most likely to pay the cost if the decision is wrong, and so they have the most incentive to make sure that the decision made is the right one. I doubt you'd find very many patients out there who would say, yeah, vitamin C drip is what's going to cure my cancer.
Yeah. Well, good point. Would you do away with Medicare Part B, the privatized part of Medicare?
I would do away with both Parts A and Part B, and what I suggest is giving Medicare beneficiaries two accounts. There's a basic account, which is going to have $5,000 in it each year, and the second one, which will have $70,000. And
okay.
In each
we got to wrap it up, David.
Okay.
We're out. David, yeah.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's David Hochberg, nationalcenter.org, and the book is Medicare's Victims, How the U.S. Government's Largest Healthcare Program Harms Patients and Impairs Physicians. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Good to see you.
Have a good one.
And welcome back, 15 minutes past the hour, and let's pick up some phone calls here. Robin, watching Free Speech TV in Kingston, Washington. Hey, Robin, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thank you very much for taking my call. I'm calling up with the general subject of Scott Walker and how I think he used kind of the left back in 2011 to his advantage, because the left hadn't modernized their activism. And the general concept that I have is, or want to put forward here, is to kind of have the progressive left to think outside the box from the 60s and the 70s and use the idea of pretest instead of protest. If you can understand protest is sort of after the fact, or it's kind of a rough club that is not really at that moment, causing direct action or direct political action. But take a look at the immense amount of energy and time and political protest or political human hours. I counted, I was counting that whole thing in 2011. I got up to 61 million, call it political protest hours, executed by the crowds and the people congregating in Madison. And then Walker's point of view, of course, was let them protest, because he knew where the energy was going. And so I postulated and am postulating that if we had taken those 61 million hours of energy converging on that capital and spread them out through Wisconsin and made direct local street actions in local communities and, you know, knocked on doors and did some signs on street corners, instead of congregating in the old centralized places, okay, and spending that time, I think that the people of Wisconsin would have been more successful then. And I also think that if we organize as such into the future, we will be much more effective. The system wants us to gather in mass in centralized places so they can ignore us. What they really don't want is local organizing. So I'm being critical of the left, which you support, but I'm also at the same time supporting your point of view about, you know, get involved. You know, it's not a spectator sport. So change the way I'm challenging the left, challenging the people of Wisconsin, challenging other people to reevaluate the process of protest. I'm not saying abandon it, not at all. That's obviously always a free speech issue and very important. But
well, it's also,
really,
you know, Robin, there probably would have been no recall if there hadn't been mass protests. I mean, it was the mass protests that got the media attention, and the media attention that then fueled the demand for the recall. So I get what you're saying, and I don't disagree with the fact that we need to. Go ahead,
Tom. I want to trump you. I want to trump you. If they had used those 61 million hours for pre-testing Scott Walker, he probably would have not been elected. So, you see, we're in a reverse cycle, and I'm trying to get this thing turned around. I'm saying, right, look, if you are a person who is willing to get in the streets and do some protesting or whatever it might be, can you please rethink about your weekly or monthly engagement in politics?
Right. And spend at least some of your time going door to door talking to your neighbors. Right?
That's all information, Tom.
Okay. Got it. Robin, thank you for the call. We'll be right back. Past the hour. Just so you know what's going on in Congress, a nice little infographic over at DU. As President Obama oversees historic improvements to foreign policy, health care, and civil rights, and yes, he has, here's what Republicans in Congress are busy with. These both from the Washington Post. Senate votes down federal protections for K-12 LGBT students. In its first vote affecting gay people since the U.S. Supreme Court decision on same-sex marriage, the Senate Tuesday rejected a federal prohibition against discrimination and bullying in K-12 public schools based on sexual orientation and gender identity. So the Republicans in the Senate said, hey, you know, gay kids getting bullied and beat up in school, tough luck. And then the other one is Republicans postpone House, that was the Senate, here's the House, Republicans postpone House vote on breast cancer bill. Republican leaders delayed a House vote Tuesday on a bill raising money for breast cancer research over anger that some of the funds might go to a group that worked with Planned Parenthood, the Planned Parenthood Federation of America. You know, they've got this, they're trying to do, and this is all over Fox so-called news, right? This is another one of these tempests in a teapot. They're trying to do to Planned Parenthood what they did to Acorn. Acorn, it turns out, never committed any crime, never did anything wrong, but James O'Keefe went in and made this video and then edited it down to look like it was something that it very much wasn't. And it got pounded so hard and so long on Fox that and the right wing blogosphere that, you know, Congress actually took action, and that was the end of Acorn. I mean, they're now going after Planned Parenthood, and they're doing it in a very similar way with a heavily edited video that misrepresents what's actually going on. So anyhow, expect to. It's amazing that the faux outrage. I mean, the story behind the story is what's going on is that some women, when they have abortions, just like, you know, some of us when we die, we say, you know, I'd like my organs to be donated to science, to, you know, to save another person's life. Some people say, well, you know, if I'm going to have an abortion, if the child is the fetus is deformed or is going to die and it's fairly far along so that there's actually parts there that might be useful to somebody, let's donate them to science. It's illegal to sell them. And Planned Parenthood doesn't sell them. But this video gets into the gory details of that, which is gross. And that's their goal, number one, to gross you out. And secondly, they imply that Planned Parenthood is selling them. They're not. They're recovering the costs of transporting things, which is just an entirely appropriate thing and is allowed by law. So it's a disingenuous. I mean, I don't mind people opposing abortion on principle, right? On religion. On principle. But when you have to distort reality in order to make your point, and then Fox so-called News takes this thing and turns it into, you know, a giant, I think at that point we've got a serious problem. Charles in Opa-locka, Florida. Hey, Charles, what's on your mind?
Oh, good afternoon, Tom.
Hey, Charles.
I was calling in. I got a couple of things I wanted to say. First of all, it was Major Garrett, I think his name is.
Yeah.
He's a White House correspondent, I think, now for CBS.
Yes.
He did the same job before for Fox News. And actually, what he did yesterday was irreprehensible. I mean, I'm burning up inside, it's been almost 24 hours, and I still feel the same way.
Yeah, he asked.
I'm just tired of the disrespect.
Yeah, he asked President Obama a question that I don't think would have been asked of a white president, frankly, and it wasn't about race, but the tone was, you know, disrespectful. I agree with you. I think it was, and Obama slapped him down though. You know, he said, you know, come on, Major Garrett, you know that's nonsense.
Well, that wasn't a good enough slap down. I mean, it's just total disrespect that the president is trying to make sure that we don't have a World War III situation, or we don't even get close to it.
Right.
And to imply that he's enjoying a victory dance right now while four hostages are languishing somewhere in Iran and he don't care about it is just totally ridiculous.
Right.
It's unacceptable now because these people are leaving Fox and they're going into the other corporate, you know, stations like CBS. I see and camaraderie on CNN, and they're spouting that same garbage.
Yeah.
And I'm sick and tired of it. So I called I looked up CBS.com yesterday, and I called their contact line, and I left a message. And I feel like, you know, this guy shouldn't be there. And, you know, I don't want anybody to be out of a job, but he needs to go back to Fox because yeah. I am also a CBS watcher. I watch some of their shows, and I watch, you know, the morning show to get my news.
Yeah.
So, you know, what I say has to be relevant. Yesterday, I also saw Janet Yellen answering questions, and the tone that came from her, I just really didn't expect it. As far as I'm concerned, even up to her, as far as, you know, these banks, they don't want regulation. They don't want...
You know, you bet. You bet.
And it's scary. It's
yeah. Yeah. Charles, thanks for the call. I shouldn't say that question wouldn't have been asked of a white president. I think that I don't think that this is about race. I think this is about our political discourse has gotten so coarse that disrespecting the president in a press conference is okay.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
And I think that that's it was an attempt at gotcha, you know, and it really should be beneath a White House reporter.
Well, why don't you use them?
Go!
I haven't got a brain.
Dumbest thing ever.
Because I haven't got a brain.
That's the dumbest thing I ever heard.
Oh, if I only had a brain.
If I only had a brain alert. Pamela Downs was arrested for passing counterfeit money. She had printed it on her home printer, her home computer printer. It was a fake $100 bill printed in black and white. And when the police asked her, you know, what's the deal, she referred to an article in 2009 titled Obama Wants Citizens to Print Their Own Money, saying that President Obama wants you to be able to print your own money. After all, he can print his money, the federal government. Turns out that that article was on a website called The Skunk, a parody website that, quote, provides tasteless American satire for the ill-informed. And she took it seriously. And printed her own money. Isn't that sweet? Oh, man. That's sad. That is sad. Darwin Award time. Lee in Milwaukee, Oregon. Hey, Lee. Thanks for listening to X-Ray FM. What's up?
Hi, Tom. I can't tell if you're fearing Scott Walker or hoping he'll be the Republican nominee because he'd be so easy to beat.
I am fearing him, and I don't think he would be easy to beat. I think that we made that mistake with Ronald Reagan. We all laughed about Ronnie Reagan and said there's no way, and he was way down in the polls. Jimmy Carter was way ahead right up until the last 4 months, and it was Rand Contra that took down Jimmy Carter. I wouldn't put anything past Scott Walker.
Well, the thing is, Ronnie Reagan wasn't dumb enough to take a fake call from a Koch brother and have it recorded when he was in the governor's office. So I want Walker to be the nominee because I think in this day and time he'd lead the GOP to a Goldwater-type disaster, mainly because of that guy who posed as a Koch brother and got a call through to the through the Wisconsin governor's office. It's even more important to remember that they let the call go through, and because I think wealth inequality is going to be the prime issue in the 2016 election. Just imagine a 30-second attack ad against Walker using part of that phone conversation, you know, that would begin something like, do you want the Koch brothers billionaires to run the country? While Scott Walker was governor of Wisconsin, he took this phone call thinking it was Charles Koch, and then you play, you know, 10 seconds of the most damaging part of it, and you conclude with, vote for Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton because they're not under the thumb of the Koch brothers. I just really think that would be like the Johnson atomic bomb spot against Goldwater.
I don't think so. We've played parts of that, fairly extensive piece of that conversation yesterday on the air, and I don't see any smoking guns there. I see Scott Walker being a very slick politician laying out political strategy about how he's going to do things for the guy that he thought was his patron. But
you have to set it up that, you know, he wouldn't, you know, the billionaire, he's taking a call in the governor's office. He wouldn't take a call from the average person, but yeah, he's certainly going to listen to Charles Koch.
And well, there
I
is.
No, if you listen to that whole tape recording, there is some very damaging stuff in there, I think, if it was used right.
Yeah, okay. There is a group called Puppet for President. Puppet number four president. You can Google it. I think that it might be puppetforpresident.com or .org. And they've got some ads that they've put together, internet ads. You can find them on YouTube. And they basically have a puppet that looks like Scott Walker. And they just make it very clear. He's a puppet for the Koch brothers. And is that who you want for president? So, yeah, I mean, that's a strategy, Lee. It's absolutely a strategy. The press has done such a bad job of pointing out all of the billionaire money and where it's all coming from and what's going on, because the money ultimately all ends up with the press. You know, these billions of dollars of television advertising are going right to the television networks. I don't know. I'm very concerned. I think Scott Walker is a formidable politician, and I think that his willingness to break the law, bend the rules, and stack the deck, basically, in order to win, and which he has been doing since he was in college, apparently, is very, very troubling. But Lee, maybe you're right. I mean, you know, we'll see how this plays out. On the Republican side, I've heard Republicans say, oh, gee, we hope that Bernie Sanders gets the nomination because he'll be easy to beat. And I think they're terribly wrong. I think Bernie Sanders will win if he gets the Democratic nomination against pretty much anybody. But the question is, will he get that far? You know, will the Democratic Party institutionally let, you know, the Debbie Wasserman Schultz who and Steve Israels who run the Democratic Party, will they let him get that far? I don't know. We'll see. But on both sides, some concerns. Lee, thanks for the call. Thanks for listening to X-Ray FM. Paul in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hey, Tom, your guest who was talking about wrote the book on Medicare. I don't know. It's hard to know where to start with him, but the first thing is that when he said, why are you asking me to talk about private insurance? I wrote my book about Medicare. Well, he was willing to bring up private insurance when he said, at least with private insurance, I can change. But the issue is because private insurance and Medicare are part of the health care insurance systems that we have in this country. So
right.
it has to be legitimate conversation to compare and contrast them with what's good and what's, you know, the pros and cons of each.
Right.
That's the first thing. The second thing is he wanted to convert Medicare into a health savings account. And I don't know, again, if he's not going to compare and contrast private insurances, where do you start? He's just pulling $5,000 for a Part B type thing and $70,000 for, he's just pulling it out of the air. Where does that come from?
Right. I don't know. I haven't read his book.
Thirdly, is that he's identifying things, problems that don't exist. It's not a big problem that people are saying, oh, when I went in for strep throat, my doctor gave me erythromycin and I wanted tetracycline. That is not a problem with either Medicare or private insurance. That's very, very much the exception to the rule. And then when you say, well, for these exceptions, if you want carrot juice drip for your or vitamin C drip for your cancer, and then he says, oh, I doubt anybody would want that. Well, so first of all, he identifies what is for sure the exception in terms of people who are in Medicare not paying for, or even private insurance not paying for the treatment they want.
Right.
And then when you suggest one, he says, oh, I doubt anybody would want that.
Yeah.
He was so backwards, I have no idea where to go with him.
Well, it's a right-wing think tank. It's a conservative think tank. And so, you know, my guess would be, and again, David's not here to defend himself, and I haven't read his book, but so to take it out of the specific and move it into the abstract, most of the arguments that I hear from conservatives about reforming Medicare are reforms, much like their arguments about Social Security, are reforms that would ultimately lead to the privatization or destruction of the system.
Yeah, and they keep talking about how we all want all of this choice. Choice from your doctor. Tom, you know that people don't sit down and interview doctors. Most people wouldn't know the first step in interviewing a doctor to see if people find their doctors either through their employer insurance plan, that's the one they go to, or a friend or relative recommends a doctor, and that's how they –
Or they do it like we did when we moved to Washington, D.C. Louise had to make like 50 or 60 phone calls because we were not able to find a doctor who would see her, you know, within a month. The earliest appointment we could get was 6 months out, and she takes this thyroid medication that she's been on for 30 years and has to have the prescription refilled, right?
Just a comparison, when he says that $5,000 for a Part B type thing and $70,000 for your hospitalization, my mother has wet macular degeneration, and she goes in every month for an injection in each of her eyes.
Ouch.
That $5,000 would be – you know what the cost of those injections are? $4,300 per injection is what Medicare is being charged.
Yeah. Well, and you know, when Louise had breast cancer, I mean, just the Herceptin, the one of the chemotherapy drugs that she was given cost $100,000.
Exactly. And when my partner had breast cancer, the treatment of her breast cancer was far more than $70,000 in a year. In the 2 years that she was in treatment, I think the treatment, I think we got the bills and looked them over and added them up. Kind of just roughly, it was about $400,000.
Yeah. Louise, you know, got a letter from her health insurance company that she was approaching her lifetime limit.
Right.
And I mean, then Obamacare kicked in, and there's no more lifetime limit. But, yeah, I'm with you. Paul, thank you for the call, and thanks for pointing out the holes in the argument and all that. Thank you. It's always nice to hear from you. Denise in Chicago. Hey, Denise, what's up? Scott Walker?
Good. Hi, Tom. Great to hear. I've been listening to you. I'm glad. I just wanted to bring up something that really is bothering me about Mr. Walker in Wisconsin. And just to verify, he did drop out, right? He did not or drop out or finish school, correct?
He completed 3 years of college. And okay. in his fourth year, he dropped out, but he was still a full year's worth of credits short.
Okay. So now I relate that to people that I know who did not get degrees, have been laid off, going back to even individuals that have different paths that don't think they need a degree for their job,
right.
You know, what they're seeking after. So I'm not putting Mr. Walker down in any way for not finishing his education or getting the final degree. What bothers me is that when you do go into the job force and you are looking for a particular segment of jobs, you cannot be hired without a degree.
Yeah.
And that's just
what bothers me, Denise, is that there's a very good chance that Scott Walker dropped out of college because of a scandal that involved him or his campaign cheating in an election where he was running for office. And, you know, that is the story of his life. The scandal follows Scott Walker. And that's why I say this guy's Richard Nixon. And I would like, you know, to know the whole story, but the whole story is unknowable. Apparently most of the records have been destroyed and people are reluctant to cross this guy, which is kind of scary. Denise, thanks for the call. It's great to hear from you. And thanks for listening to us on iTunes. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I didn't know you could listen to us on iTunes. Apparently you can. Denise was. Huh. We'll be back 15 minutes before the hour. And welcome back. Anthony, watching Free Speech TV in Chicago. Hey, Anthony, what's up?
Hi, Tom.
Hey, Anthony.
Just a little, I'd like a little clarification on the Iran deal and all this talk about why the president left those prisoners in Iran. As I understand it, this was an arms control deal, not a prisoner swap.
That's correct.
Correct?
That's correct.
And
there are a lot of other things that we have problems with Iran about, you know, Hezbollah, all these other things. This was not about any of those. This was about whether or not there's going to be nuclear weapons in Iran, period.
Yes, and my second point is if the obstructionist Republicans in Congress had allowed the president to close Guantanamo, wouldn't those four men be at home with their families right now?
I don't know. Why? What does Guantanamo have to do with Iran holding Americans that they allege were spies?
Well, that's what I'm asking you. Is there a connection?
I don't think that there is.
More open to letting prisoners go? Might they not have been more open to letting prisoners go?
I doubt it. I think that there's two things going on. I think one is that the regime in Iran may be sufficiently paranoid that they actually believe that those four guys were spies. And it's not impossible that, you know, one or two or three or all four of them actually were, although I doubt it. Certainly, I doubt the Washington Post reporter had anything to do with it. And secondly, it may be that Iran took those people and arrested them in hopes that they could use that as pressure against us to get us to lift the sanctions. And that, you know, that, which is how, you know, the kind of straws they're grasping at, basically. And if that's the case, then I would guess that 90 days down the road, when the sanctions get lifted, more or less 90 days down the road, toward this fall, that probably those hostages will be released. Or those, they're not hostages. Well, I suppose you could call them hostages. Prisoners will be released. Yeah.
Well, we hope so.
Yeah, we'll see how it plays out. You know, we'll just have to see how this plays out. Anthony, thanks for the call. Patty in Harstein Island, Washington. Hey, Patty, what's up?
Hi, Tom. One quick question, and then I wrote you a little ditty.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, you had the schmooze of Scott Walker on, and he mentioned that his grandfather had been a machinist for decades.
Right.
If I'm not mistaken, I don't think that's a labor union job.
Yeah, well, my dad was in a shop that was represented by the United Machinist Union.
Yes. Well, I'm sure somebody can check to see if his grandfather was a union member. And here's your ditty. It goes like this. Look for the marionette strings when you are vetting for our president. Yes, look for the money behind them. They will sell our jobs off yet again. If you really love America and your heart be ever so true, then look for the money and the puppet strings to see who's buying you.
Wow, that's a takeoff on the International Ladies Garment Workers Union, the ILGW, or whatever it is, old TV ad from the 60s. That's great. Patty, and you sing really well.
A lot of smile.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Tom. You guys have a great day.
Thank you. Bye. You too. Bye now. We'll be back. It's 10 minutes before the hour. Minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, and find out what's going on in the world today. Bob Ney is with us. Oh, this is brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and free-don.org. Bob Ney is with us. Congressman, welcome back.
Thank you, Tom. How are you?
I am well. I should add you are the author of Sideswiped, which is a book that everybody should read if they want to know how D.C. works. So what's up in the world today?
Well, talking about Iran first, and I, you know, listened about the, you know, the caller was talking about prisoners, et cetera. I did want to point out in the scope of things and some of the points of view that aren't necessarily publicly talked about, but from 2001 to 2005, the American CIA captured an estimated 150 people in what's called rendition. Those people were taken to foreign countries, although we denied it at that time, and were put into various prisons and into torture situations. So the reason I want to mention that is because on the line of questioning about American, you know, who are prisoners in Iranian jails, the four of them, it wasn't part of the deal, just as the renditions have never been part of the deal of freeing them when we've negotiated with other countries. So, you know, these things historically have happened. I think the only reason this is pointed out so much now in the media is because of the way that Major Garrett asked that question.
Right.
And it really wasn't a question. It's being viewed by the D.C. The media as more of a publicity stunt, in a sense.
Or an accusation.
Absolutely. Accusation. He was actually able to telepathically read the president's mind and know what he thought about for Americans in jail, basically, is
right.
What he was saying.
Yeah.
It was an insulting way to ask it. It's a free country, but it's not going down well amongst the media.
And he's tried to justify himself by saying, "Well, I was trying to hit a nerve, and apparently I did." I think Marshall Garrett blew it, or Major Garrett, excuse me, Major Garrett. Yeah. He's a nice guy. I mean, he's a, you know, but I don't know anything about his politics. I mean, I had a beer with him once, but that's it.
Right. Well, he could have actually got the question out in the right way to have kind of, you know, pinned the president down on two issues in his question. But again, it's not selling well with the media because it just simply was a statement.
Yeah.
A pointed statement versus a question.
Yeah.
Now, the issue of Iran itself, of course, it was an agreement not with outside issues, you know, of the prisoners. I'm sure conversations have occurred, you know, in that regard. The bottom line is now everybody's kind of scrambling in the Congress because the Republicans have not recognized this or attempted to as a treaty. They have, from day one, recognized this as an agreement, which is what the White House had deemed this. Now, that's an important point. Had it been fought by the Republicans in the idea that it was a treaty, not an agreement from day one, they may have actually been able to undertake some legal questions on it to try to say it is a treaty, but they didn't do that. So they crafted something that, frankly, Tom, was doomed a couple of months ago when they sent it to the president, in the sense of trying to get the override votes of 290 in the House, 66 7 in the Senate.
Right. If they'd done it as a treaty, it would have only required 2/3 of the Senate. The House would not have been involved.
Right. And one vote. And they could have actually not done anything with it. And they could have let that treaty then sit. And if it did that, it could have went past the time where we could have even acted with the Security Council.
Right, because treaties have to be approved, and agreements can be just only have to be rejected.
That's right. So anybody that says, well, starts to say this is a treaty, even the Republican-controlled Congress recognized it is not a treaty, it's an agreement. The president has also thrown out a question there of what is the alternative, which nobody in Washington really wants to say, which is war. Even John McCain doesn't go to the point where he says, well, you know, we need to go to war.
Well, actually, he has. He, when he was running for president, it was bomb, 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 Iran.
Remember? I mean, in this context now.
Okay.
And you make a great point, though, on that, because I was asked the question yesterday, well, what are, you know, somebody said death to Satan, you know, Shaitun, as they say in Iran, and many times on television in Iran, John McCain standing there as a candidate, an official candidate for the presidency of the United States, singing Bomb Iran, doesn't play well either. There were also children in the streets in Tehran last night with American flags painted on one cheek and Iranian flags on the other because the Iranian people are quite happy with this, not because they think they're going to be able to create a nuclear device out of it. They're happy with it because they believe that the country will open up. So there's a lot of issues yet to go, and the president stated that on diplomacy, other issues, prisoners, you know, everything under the sun that Iran's behavior, but this is an agreement on the nuke issue itself.
Hmm.
And, of course, it goes through its process. I don't believe it'll be stopped.
Yeah, yeah. I suspect you're right. By the way, does that mean that if the Trans-Pacific Partnership is presented to Congress as a trade agreement, that Congress doesn't have to approve it, that they would have to oppose it to stop it?
Well, that's interesting. If it was an agreement, I guess it would follow along the same line.
Yeah. We both need to do a little homework on that.
That's right. That's a very interesting point on it.
Yeah. What else is going on in the world?
I did want to talk about the fact of this whole issue, and it started when Speaker John Boehner talked about having to probe a Planned Parenthood video, which we now know has alterations in it. Planned Parenthood has denied that they had prompted people to sell or that they participated in selling parts of fetuses.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was very interesting, Tom, because Speaker Boehner came out and said that he would have a congressional investigation into whether or not Planned Parenthood is selling organs from aborted fetuses. In the next breath, he said President Obama should denounce and stop these practices. So I don't know why one would investigate something when you've already determined it's happened.
Right.
I just thought it was...
And for the record, it has not happened.
That's right. And so they're probably going to assign it to a couple of committees along the way. But
I think this is
and
just...
And also the highway funding bill has been punted down. It's really going to be tough for states any highway work with this measure.
Oh, that's not good. That's not good. Yeah, I think the whole Planned Parenthood thing, they're trying to do an acorn, you know? And we'll see where it goes. Bob Ney, Congressman, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Good talking with you. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. 7 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Just thought it would be interesting to contrast and compare Scott Walker and Bernie Sanders. We should have some Hillary clips like this, too, so that we could play. But that's a whole other project for another day. We've got these right now from Bernie's speech in Wisconsin and Scott Walker's introduction to his campaign kickoff a couple of days ago. And so let's start out with clip number one. This is Scott Walker working at McDonald's and saving up for college. Here he is.
Now, as a kid, My first job was washing dishes at the countryside restaurant. Then I moved up to the big time. I started flipping hamburgers in high school at McDonald's to save up for college.
Right. And you can't do that anymore, right? You cannot put yourself through college working at McDonald's in the summer. You just can't do it. And so let's go to clip 11 of Bernie, if you can find it. Here's Senator Sanders talking about wages.
But to my mind, the federal minimum wage of 7¼ an hour is a starvation wage which must be raised. The minimum wage must become a living wage, which means $15 an hour over the next few years. Now, I don't think it is a terribly radical idea to say that in America, if somebody works 40 hours a week, that that person should not be living in poverty.
And then, And then, apropos of Scott Walker saying that he worked at McDonald's to put himself through college, here's clip number 23. This is Bernie on public university tuition.
So we've introduced legislation, which I will push through as president, that does two things. Number one, it will make every public college and university in America tuition free. So we are saying to every kid in America, if you study hard, if you do your work, you will, in fact, be able to get all of the education you need, regardless of the income of your family.
All right. Let's go to clip number 5 of Scott Walker. He wants to drug test welfare recipients because, you know, welfare recipients are just the scum of the earth and we have to shame them and humiliate them. Here's Scott Walker.
And now, as of the budget I just signed, we make the same requirement to make sure people can pass a drug test before they get a welfare check.
Got to pass a drug test before you get a welfare check. This speaks to family values, which would be clip number 12 and 13 of Senator Sanders. Here's clip number 12 of Bernie.
Many of our Republican friends are very deeply concerned about family values. They love families. And their view of family values is that women should not be able to control their own bodies. Their view of family values is that women should not be able to purchase the contraceptives they need. You know, when I say these things, it really is hard to believe. Can you imagine? And their view of family values is that gay people should not be able to get married.
So then Bernie says, here's our view of family values.
Now, that is their view, their warped view of family values. Let me give you another view of family values. I have 4 kids. I got 7 beautiful grandchildren. My wife is here. We've been married for 27 years. I believe, and you believe, in the importance of family. And that is why. Because we believe in real family values, the United States must end the international embarrassment of being the only major country on earth that does not guarantee workers paid medical and family leave, that does not guarantee workers paid sick time or paid vacation time.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about freedom. Here is Scott Walker, clip number 6, freedom, his definition of freedom, right? Here we go.
You see, that's freedom, the kind of freedom that's the cornerstone of the American dream. And so we've got a plan to help more people live that dream, a plan that will help more people create more jobs and higher wages. And you know what it starts with? We need to repeal Obamacare once and for all.
Right. And clip number 26 is Bernie on this very same issue. Here's Senator Sanders.
This country must make 2 fundamental decisions with regard to health care. Number 1, in America, health care must be a right for all of our people. And the number two, if we are going to provide health care to all of our people in a cost-effective way, if we're going to take the burden of health care off the backs of small businesses, we need to move to a Medicare for all single-payer system.
Right. Scott Walker thinks that regulations, you know, like banksters can't rob us blind, the Consumer Protection Bureau that Elizabeth Warren created, these regulations that protect us from predatory corporations, that they're a terrible thing. This is Scott Walker, clip number 7, talking about how we need to do away with regulations.
As governor, I called for a moratorium on new regulations. We can do the same in Washington, and then we can repeal all the other bad Obama regulations to get this economy going again.
Right. Those billionaires with their polluting factories and their oil business and their paper business and their, they shouldn't be regulated. The banksters shouldn't be regulated. We need to get rid of these regulations. Clip 19, here is Senator Sanders on regulating at least the banks.
And when we talk about greed, when we talk about recklessness, when we talk about illegal behavior, these are just another word, another phrase to describe Wall Street. In my view, and this is a hugely important issue for the future of our economy, it is time to break up the largest financial institutions in this country. Wall Street cannot continue to be an island unto itself, gambling trillions in risky financial instruments while expecting the public to bail it out. In my view, and we've introduced legislation to deal with this, if a bank is too big to fail, it is too big to exist.
Yeah, we're close enough to the break now that the next one was going to be Scott Walker shouting out to the oil industry and Bernie Sanders saying climate change is a great crisis, and we'll we can get to that in a little bit, but it's anything goes summer. A lot of people are on the phone, so I'll be waiting to come on the air. So we're going to hit a break in 30 seconds, and when we come back from that, we'll be picking up your phone calls. But the point that I'm trying to make here is that, you know, they say the conventional wisdom in the media, and particularly on the right, but I mean right across the board, is that Bernie Sanders is some kind of far left radical. Bernie Sanders represents the mainstream of American public opinion. And you can demonstrate this with any poll you want. Scott Walker is the radical. The Republican Party are the radicals. And as Bernie Sanders points out, in fact, the Republicans are extremists. That's clip number 1 from Bernie. We'll come back with that, and then I'll pick up your phone calls. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
15 minutes past the hour, anything goes summer here on the Tom Hartman Program. Compare and contrast Republicans and Democrats. What do you want? Welcome back. 15 minutes past the hour. Steve in Perrysville, Indiana, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Oh, Tom, I wanted to talk about that gentleman you had on.
David Hochberg.
Medicare.
Yeah.
I'm very happy with my Medicare. I've got a supplemental and the Medicare. The supplemental cost me a little bit, but I've had open heart surgery in January, triple bypass surgery, and then just last the 29th of June, I had to have part of my colon taken out to make sure that I didn't have cancer.
Yikes.
In it. And right there, those two were probably over $200,000.
Right.
Because I spent 5 days in the hospital with a bypass surgery, and I spent 8 days in the hospital with the colon surgery.
Right.
And I don't know where he gets the $5,000 and $75,000. I'd be bankrupt.
Yeah.
Because I don't want all the rest of that for...
Well, the one thing about, you know, conservative plans for America is that they typically work really, really well if you're rich. You know, if you're not, you're toast. So, yeah, I'm with you. Steve, thank you for sharing your story. I suspect most people on Medicare are quite happy with it, although I've not done a poll.
I'm very happy with it.
Yeah, but I've heard that from other people as well. Thank you for the call. Sandy in Norwood, North Carolina. Hey, Sandy, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I enjoy listening to you. I get so much information from you. It's like being immersed in a history book.
Thank you.
I want to ask you a question about the gerrymandering that the SCOTUS came down, said it was unconstitutional in Arizona.
Yeah.
Something like violated the First and 14th Amendment,
well,
I think.
Well, no, it was the other way around. What they said was that the legislation that Arizona passed, which was somewhat similar to what happened in California, that redistricting would no longer be done by the state legislature. It would instead be, or whichever party controlled the state legislature, that it would instead be done by a nonpartisan commission with the goal of creating a nonpartisan redistricted map, that was not unconstitutional, that was acceptable. That's what they said.
Right. Okay. But they only did it for Arizona. Would it not?
It is now the case for every state in the union.
It applies to every state in the union.
Right. But what has to happen is the individual states then have to pass legislation creating these commissions. But they can do, they now we know, and there's efforts now to do this in a number of states. And now we know it can be done, because the Supreme Court said it can be done. I mean, this could be a really big deal, particularly, you know, it's going to probably take a decade or more for it to kind of sink in. But this could be the beginning of a serious cleaning up of the American political process, because gerrymandering, I mean, it takes, well, for example, in Michigan, for every one Republican vote to elect a legislator, it would take two Democratic votes to elect the same legislator. The same thing in Pennsylvania, it takes 2.5. And in Virginia, it takes almost 3. In Ohio, it takes almost 3. You know, it takes 3 Democrats to put somebody in office, whereas it only takes one Republican. This is because of gerrymandering. So I think things will change. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And I will pick up your phone calls after just this one Bernie clip, because, as I said, the whole main... Not only the Republican talking point, but frankly, increasingly the Democratic establishment talking point is that Bernie is somehow some kind of a radical. Here's clip number one of Senator Sanders addressing that very issue, an extremist.
Let me just say a few words to my friends in the Republican Party about extremism. When you deny the right of workers to come together in collective bargaining, that's extremism. When you tell a woman that she cannot control her own body, that's extremism. When you think a woman is a child and can't purchase a contraceptive, that is extremism. When you give tax breaks to billionaires and refuse to raise the minimum wage, that's extremism.
There you go. So, okay, enough of that. Anything goes Friday. Summer, excuse me. Tracy in Detroit, Michigan. Hey, Tracy, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I love your show.
Thank you.
But, you know, I hate to talk about that guest, but I'm another one. What a hack. You know, here in Michigan, we just had a doctor sentenced to 45 years in prison for giving people chemotherapy when they didn't need it.
Right.
So this thing about... We don't want to come between you and your doctor. We have all these different checks and balances in place. Now, true, they're not always working.
Right.
But we, you know, we get statements. I have Blue Cross. You know, we're a union state. I'm a union member, my family. And so I get a statement from Blue Cross, which is like part of the checks and balances. Is this charging too much? Make sure the doctor aren't charging Blue Cross for what, you know, is a part of cost savings for Blue Cross.
Right.
But at the same time, these insurance companies, they have doctors on staff that when they get diagnosis, they check to make sure the treatments are right. And this is, and when he's talking about Medicare, how, you know, they shouldn't have any say. So, no, you have to have another person because we, the patient, we don't know.
Right.
We're not doctors. So
that was my point.
Patients
don't go to medical school. You know, how are they supposed to, you know, second guess their doctor?
Exactly. And to assume that the doctor has every answer, just like to assume every insurance company knows what's best in a hospital. No, they check each other.
Right.
Because if a diagnosis, if a doctor feels the insurance company is not doing right by you, they will advocate on your side.
Yeah.
Because they want to see you get treated because they don't want to have their malpractice insurance impacted.
Yep. Yep.
So,
and they don't want to go to jail.
Right. So there's a whole lot of, you know, to just say what that clown was saying, it just doesn't work. We, you know, we the consumer, we are at the mercy of the medical profession.
Yeah. I agree with you, Tracy, although I wouldn't characterize a guest as a clown, but I agree with you. And thank you for the call. Calvin in Wilmington, North Carolina. Hey, Calvin, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, how you doing today?
Good.
Yeah, that last clip of Bernie Sanders, he kind of reminds me of FDR.
Yeah. There is very, very, very little light between Bernie Sanders and FDR. Their policies are pretty much identical.
Right, right. But I tell you, Scott Walker, he scares me. I'm really concerned. And the thing is, I can't seem to convince my friends that they need to take him seriously. They think he's a joke. But, you know, I try to tell them, hey, he's destroying the unions in Wisconsin. He's cutting their education funding, plus a lot more.
Right.
Then I heard you mention how he's now got the court slanted in his favor.
Yep. And they just today they stopped a criminal investigation into him and his buddies that has already led to the conviction of several of his aides. And they just stopped it cold in order that all the evidence against Walker be destroyed. The Supreme Court of Wisconsin, after you know, Koch brothers' money and other billionaire money funded four massive campaigns to get these four right-wingers on the Supreme Court in Wisconsin. I think specifically for this case, I think the Koch brothers have been grooming Scott Walker for 4 or 5 years to be president of the United States.
Oh, I have to agree. I have to agree. And, you know, the thing is, Scott Walker is a very smooth and convincing talker.
Yeah.
I say that everything that he says, we need to fact check him on everything that he says.
Well, at a certain level, there's the, you know, how do you tell if he's lying, his lips are moving? I mean, it's, you know, we went through his speech the other day, step by step, and it's just everything is wrong. I mean, it's astonishing.
Right. And I think he's definitely being groomed because, you know, look at all the other candidates out there. He doesn't have the baggage, like Christie with the Bridgegate.
Right.
Unlike Jeb Bush, he's currently running.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeb Bush is the person who stands between Scott Walker and the Republican nomination right now. And I'm of the opinion that that's why Donald Trump is in the race, is to take down Jeb Bush, because that's all he talks about is how bad Jeb Bush is. Calvin, thanks a lot for the call. And of course, Donald Trump, being a billionaire, represents the interests of the billionaires.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
I'm going to write an op-ed about this today. We'll be right back. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. Viagra for your brain, the Tom Hartman Program. Larry in Covington, Georgia. Hey, Larry, what's on your mind today? Larry? Oh, it's that time of day, yeah. Oh, yeah, funny thing about Larry, try calling us back. If you can hear me, I can't hear you. I've been complaining about our Comcast service dropping out and thus blowing up our phones. And I got this. This is just hysterical stuff. Let me find it. The Jade Helm, you know, this. These guys are all hysterical about this. These military exercises that they're going to be having, or they are having. It's actually started day before yesterday or yesterday. Yep, you know, down in Texas, and people are, you know, like literally burying their guns because they're convinced that the government is coming to take them. This from for some reason the printer didn't print the name of the website here. I'm sorry, I don't have it, but something. This is a headline from one of the right wing sites. This is the All News Pipeline, and it's by Susan Duclos. Something very strange is happening right now. Jade Helm 15 begins the same-day service outages reported across America by multiple providers. Apparently, it's not just Comcast, and apparently it's all part of the conspiracy to take down America. They've got these maps showing the parts of America that on the day that Jade Helm started, that Internet service started failing. There's the Comcast outage map, the Cox outage map, the Time Warner cable outage map, the T-Mobile outage map, the AT&T outage map, the Verizon wireless outage map. And they say, is it a coincidence that all these providers suffered massive outages on the same day? Is it also a coincidence that all these outages are occurring the very same day Jade Helm 15 officially begins? Will we be told by the mainstream media that all of this is just a glitch, as other recent strange events were blamed on? Maybe the most important question should be, is it also a coincidence that events once again happen as the U.S. government performs unprecedented drills, while so many attacks, shootings, and other headline news events occurred during training or drills in the past? Something very strange is happening right now in America. Heads up. Oh, that Jade Helm, this is Obama coming for your guy. I'm telling you, people in Texas, it's time to, you know, go out in the backyard, dig a hole in the ground, and stick your head in it. Joe in Pompano Beach, Florida. Hey, Joe, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, loud and clear.
Okay, what's up?
Well, I kind of disagree with all the people that are bashing your guest, number one, only because, you know, we go to seek, you know, medical advice from doctors, and hopefully, you know, the first diagnosis is correct. However, when it's not, we're encouraged always on our own or through consultation with other people to get a second opinion,
right,
which kind of proves that not everything a doctor says is correct at that time, and you shouldn't have to accept that.
Right.
And I think those options are always on the table, and if people want to just believe that, you know, Dr. Zeus is great.
Well, doesn't Medicare pay for second opinions?
I don't know. I don't pay attention to that stuff.
I thought it did. I think most.
And I don't mean to be rude. I just don't pay attention.
Yeah. Well, then, if you're not paying attention, how can you have a strong opinion about it?
Well, no, I know. I do have a strong opinion. I mean, I go to physicians routinely. I mean, I pay my bills. I get reimbursed. But you think that
instead of Medicare, elderly people should have a $5,000 account to pay for their copay and a $70,000 account to pay for catastrophic illness, David's proposal.
You hit me with a question that I don't give much thought to it unless I had to. I'm not a wealthy guy. It's just that I don't waste my time every day thinking about those things. If I need medical attention, I seek it out.
Right, you know, because presumably you have insurance or you're rich, one or the other, right?
No, I'm not rich, but I've been.
You do have insurance.
I do have insurance.
Okay,
from
great.
An impoverished background.
Yeah.
You know, I was blessed by learning to read and write. I finished in the lowest third of my high school class. I became successful later on because I kind of knew how to read and write. I figured that out. That's kind of a formula when you go to college, and. But in high school, I played a lot of baseball, and that was kind of a fun time for me. But, I mean, you know, I believe in the American dream. I believe I like all kinds of people. I respect every opinion out there, whether you're a progressive, a Democrat, Republican, independent, confused. It doesn't bother me.
Right.
It's like
I got it, Joe. I got it. Thanks a lot for the call. Robert in South Gray, South Carolina. Hey, Robert, what's up?
Yes. Ronald Reagan said star of the beast, which is the government.
Right.
I think anyone that opposes the government shouldn't be allowed to run for office or even vote.
It is a weird spectacle to see people who are trashing the government of the United States that George Washington had three horses shot out from underneath him to create, saying that they want to run for public office when they hate the government. I'm with you, Robert. I wouldn't, you know, pass a law about it or anything, but I think that the American people should take seriously when these guys say they hate the government, but they want to be in. I mean, Scott Walker has literally been a politician his entire life, and he's running on, you know, politicians are bad. It's bizarre. It's bizarre. Robert, thank you for the call. Jim in Covington, Louisiana, you wanted to talk about the JFK assassination?
Yeah, Tom. I just wanted to say, I mean, I agree with you to some extent there was mob involvement, but I have to go. I'm more familiar with what do you think about the Jim Garrison investigation, how that fits in with you?
I think Jim Garrison, he was pulling on some threads, and the one that involved David Ferry and Carlos Marcello was could have been very productive if he had followed it. But he was I think, a little too certain that the government was involved in killing Kennedy. I mean, the number three guy in the CIA at that time was, as I recall, Howard Hunt, and he had an assistant, Bernard Barker, who was also a hitman and an associate of Carlos Marcello, and I don't think that Hunt knew that, and so when the plan to kill Kennedy was put together, Barker basically was in a position to communicate between the mob and to communicate to the mob what the CIA was up to and vice versa, and so the mob was able to convince the CIA and Lyndon Johnson ultimately, and I think Johnson went to his grave believing this, that it was actually Castro who killed Kennedy. And that Lee Oswald was a Castro-loving communist, and that's why, and that Castro was somehow behind it, and that Lyndon Johnson was so afraid that that would get out into the public, that Congress actually concluded specifically and explicitly that it was the consequence of a conspiracy, not a lone nut, not a lone assassin. I mean, that was the official conclusion of the House investigation into the assassination. Garrison, he was early on. Lamar and I worked on this thing for 17 years, and I don't think that we have the whole answer, but I think we've got a good chunk of it. But I don't think that anybody official in the government had anything to do with killing Kennedy, although the federal government officially was very active in covering up who killed Kennedy, because they thought they were covering up the fact that Castro killed Kennedy. So they had to mutilate the body and hide evidence and any testimony. I mean, I had Dave Powers, who was in the car right behind Jack Kennedy when they were driving. Dave Powers and Kenny McDonald were Kennedy's right-hand man and his PR guy, and they'd been with him since he was in the House of Representatives back in Boston, in Massachusetts. And Dave was the head of the Kennedy Library, the JFK Library. And this was, I don't know, 15 years ago or thereabouts. Dave has since passed on. And I sat in his office in the Kennedy Library, sitting in the rocking chair that Jack Kennedy had in the White House. And Dave autographed a copy of Time magazine Life magazine with Jack Kennedy's picture on the front cover. And he told me that he was sitting in the car. He was in the car behind Jack Kennedy, and he saw the muzzle flash from the grassy knoll, from the hilltop. He described it as the hilltop there. And then he heard the rifle shot from behind him. And he said, and Kenny grabbed him and pushed him down to the floor and said, "We're in a crossfire, Dave." And I said, "Did you tell this to the Warren Commission?" And he said, "Well, I tried to, but Jerry Ford kept interrupting me." And you go back and you can read his testimony in the Warren Commission report, and that's exactly the case. And the reason why they didn't want that said was that they didn't want it to look like it was a conspiracy, because that would, in their minds, in Earl Warren's mind and Lyndon Johnson's mind, that would lead back to Castro. And if the American people knew that Castro had killed Kennedy, there would be such, keep in mind, this was just a year after the Cuban Missile Crisis. If the American people thought that Castro had killed Kennedy, there would be such an outcry for an invasion of Cuba, and that President Johnson would not be able to refuse it. And if he invaded Cuba at that point, you know, a year after the Cuban Missile Crisis, there was no doubt in his mind that the Soviet Union would unleash nuclear missiles on us. And he was not prepared to start World War III over who killed Kennedy. And that's really what it came down to. So thus, the government was very involved in the cover-up. They were not involved at all in the assassination, though. That was Marcello and Trafficante. Jim, thanks a lot for the call. If you want, you know, Lamar's got a new book out about this, and the book that he and I both wrote is called Legacy of Secrecy. And there's another one, an earlier book that we wrote about this called Ultimate Sacrifice. But Legacy of Secrecy really lays it out quite clearly. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We're going to have to get Lamar back on here sometime for a good long hour and talk about this. It's such a great topic. We'll be back. Welcome back. Jim in Long Beach, California. Hey, Jim, thanks for watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. What's up?
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me?
I do.
Oh, cool. Yeah, thank you. Listen, real quick. By the way, I really have a lot of respect for you, and you do a heck of a job.
Thank you.
So I don't want to sound like a disciple of gloom, but just a few minutes ago you had mentioned about the filibuster and how Arizona has finally gotten, woken up a little bit.
Yeah,
and,
you mean gerrymandering, not filibustering.
Gerrymandering. Yeah. No, thank you very much. Thank you. And that hopefully in 10 years the rest of us can get our act together.
Yeah.
And I have one comment after I make this statement. I don't feel, God bless our country, I don't think we got 10 years. If we don't get our act together from our elected officials on both aisles that we elect that don't seem to do what we ask them to do on both sides, we're doomed. And my second point is, trusting Iran or trusting America, last 10 years, as I look at the Middle East, I say to myself, let me see, how many times has Israel attacked countries in the Middle East? 6. How many times has America attacked in the last 7 years? 2. How many times has Iran attacked anyone in that area in the last 15 years? None. What do we do with Saddam? We backed him to kill 100,000 Iranians back X amount of years ago, and NATO and Libya, and we killed Gaddafi. So right. Who do we really trust? That's right. My question.
Yeah. Good point, Jim. Good point. And your point that if we don't get our act together politically, we're doomed. I don't disagree with that. In fact, that's part of the premise of my book, The Crash of 2016, that the crash of 2016 is going to come about as a consequence of politics, being driven by billionaires and transnational corporations. And that if we don't clean our act up, we are in for a whole world of hurt. And just like we experienced in the 1929 to 1935. And that could be a really bad thing or a really good thing. Is that the sort of thing you had in mind?
Well, yeah, I'm just really, to be honest with you, I am scared to death. I've been all over the world, made money all over the world. I'm almost 70 years of age. I have grandkids. I have people I'm concerned about. I'm concerned about the world. America is heading, you're a bright man. China's the most powerful country on earth, period. Wall Street's taken over. There's no regulations. When Eisenhower was a president, tax bracket was 90% for the upper 5%. Reagan comes along, pulls all of his tricks, dumps taxes, gets rid of unions, deregulates banks. I mean, unless you're a complete idiot, which I know you aren't, and I'm hoping the bulk of America aren't, can't people see we are in a lot of trouble? We got to make changes immediately?
You would think so. You would think so. And actually, I think, yes. I've been saying this ever since the Tea Party erupted. And, it was an AstroTurf thing. It was started by billionaires as a way of, trying to be a political anti-Obama force. But a lot of Americans who were just average Americans showed up for Tea Party rallies because they know this country is not working. They may not know how or why. They lack the sophistication or the understanding or even the education to know that. And by even the education, I mean, we're not teaching government and civics in our schools anymore. And so they would show up with signs saying silly things like, keep your government hands off my Medicare. But I think that there's a populist wave sweeping this country, and you're seeing it right now in the phenomena of Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump. And you saw it a couple of years ago in the Tea Party. And this next election is going to be a very, very interesting one. And if the establishment and the parties prevail on both sides, I agree with you. We're going to be in deep, deep trouble. We'll be back. Jim, thank you for the call. Welcome back. 10 minutes before the hour. Tony in Fort Worth, Texas. Hey, Tony, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call and for all you do.
You're welcome. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I'd like to pitch something out here to you. I was listening to the clip of Scott Walker, and he made a very interesting word that I haven't used any other Republican used before or since. And he used the word cornerstone. And the first thing that I think of when I hear the word cornerstone is the cornerstone speech that was given in 1861, and I'm kind of want to pitch this out to you. Do you think that's his way of letting the deep Southern Republican voters know that, you know, he's the man that they want to put in the White House?
Now, let me make sure that you and I are talking about the same thing. Are you talking about the cornerstone speech that was given by the Vice President of the Confederacy? I'm forgetting his name, in which he said that blacks were inferior to whites and that they were appropriate to work in the sun, and this was God's will, and therefore the South had to secede because the North wanted to free the slaves?
Yes, sir. Alexander Stevens, I believe his name is.
Right.
Or was.
Right. Yeah. The Vice President of the Confederacy. That's very interesting.
Exactly.
That's a very interesting observation. I don't know. I mean, you know, say Cornerstone. I thought where you were going to go with that was the Masons, you know, cornerstones of buildings. But yeah, you're right. That was called the cornerstone speech, and it's quite famous in the South. And I kind of doubt it. Although Reagan, I mean, the first speech that Ronald Reagan gave after he was nominated to be president of the United States by the Republican Party was down in Philadelphia, Mississippi, or just down the road from Philadelphia, Mississippi, at a county fair. And Philadelphia, Mississippi, of course, is where Schirmer and Goodman and Cheney, the three civil rights leaders were murdered, or civil rights workers were viciously murdered, tortured and murdered. And Reagan's speech was all about states' rights. I mean, it was a naked shout out to the white races South following up on Nixon's Southern strategy. And he carried the South in large part as a consequence of that, I think. So, if Scott Walker's use of the word cornerstone was not a shout out to those Southern white racists, I expect one to come, is what I would say. Tony, thanks a lot for the call. It's great to hear from you. That's fascinating, fascinating. I hadn't even thought of it. Diego in Pueblo, Colorado. Hey, Diego, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Good.
First of all, I'd just like to, it's an honor to talk to the man that turned me on to Bernie Sanders and kind of turned my whole political view around.
Thank you.
But to your point, Tom, you had mentioned that, you know, you suspect that Scott Walker is nothing more than a Coke puppet. I just wanted to remind you of the prank call made by even Ian Murphy, the editor at the Buffalo Beast, back during when Scott Walker was busy dismantling the Wisconsin.
Where he thought he was talking to David Koch, and he was basically groveling.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. I remember it well. In fact, we played a part of that yesterday on this program. So yeah, I'm with you, Diego, and thanks for the reminder for all our listeners who might not have caught it. So thank you very much. Let's see here, Richard in Bloomingdale, Illinois. Hey, Richard, what's up? No, Richard. Okay, let's try Judy in Chicago. Hey, Judy.
Oh, hi. I just want to talk about that gentleman that called earlier about the Medicare and refer to the young guy that was just on the phone that said, you know, when he just works and he doesn't think about catastrophic illnesses or anything. You know, well, when I was 30, neither did I. But my husband has a mild form of leukemia, and every now and then he has to have what they call IVIG infusions.
Mm-hmm.
And one infusion in 1 month is $11,000.
Wow.
I know. So, I mean, thank God for Medicare, or I would be a widow.
Yeah.
And I've had both my shoulders replaced. Now, When I was working and had Blue Cross and Blue Shield, that was fine. But when I retire, where would I get the money to pay for that?
Yeah. Well, you know, you'd have your $5,000 out-of-pocket fund and your $70,000.
$70,000 that my husband would use up in 3 months.
Yeah.
Kind of like the Ryan thing. Give me my voucher and I'll be happy.
Right, right.
The guy actually had no idea, and I totally agree with you 100% about Scott Walker. He is a dangerous, dangerous person out there because people just look at him and see this guy that looks like this young, cool-cut kid, you know, right off the cheese factory.
Rides a Harley, doesn't even wear a sports coat.
Oh, yeah, good guy. He is dangerous. He has decimated.
I'm telling you, he's Richard Nixon. I'm telling you. Judy, thank you for the call. Melissa in Fenton, Missouri. Hey, Melissa, you took a trip to Mississippi?
I'm getting ready to take a trip to Mississippi. Every year we go down there to our aunt's place, and she had the cabin in Neshoba County Fair. And I'm trying to talk now, you get a short time. But the fair actually has houses that you only live in like 2 weeks out of the year, and you have to buy these houses. And they go from like anywhere from $150,000 to $300,000. And our aunt's already down there, her house, and she said that the Confederate flags are all over the place down there, that they're ready for during the fair. We'll be down there Thursday, and I will be taking a lot of video, a lot of audio, and things like that. People down there are just so, they don't understand the hate. They consider that Southern pride, and they're stupid about it.
Right.
And, you know, I said, you know, if you're rolling with the Confederate flag, go with the navy blue one. It's actually for the Confederate Army.
Yeah.
They have a whole different understanding of the Confederate War and everything else and slavery than what we do up north.
Yeah, no, it was the War of Southern Aggression, and the slave owners were nice people who took good care of their slaves and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And you try to explain to them, no, these were concentration camps, and, you know, people were, lives were destroyed, and people were... And and by the way, you're right. That the Confederate flag, the so-called Confederate flag that there's all this controversy around that just got taken down in South Carolina, was actually Robert E. Lee's battle flag. It was the flag of the Army of Northern Virginia, and you know, period, full stop. Melissa, thanks for that. You know, let us know how it works out. Give us a call back. That's a little spooky. It's not surprising, but it's a little spooky. Thanks for being with us today. My apologies to those of you who didn't get an opportunity to call in. Try again tomorrow. We'll be back tomorrow with Anything Goes Friday and Anything Goes Summer. And until then, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It does require all of us to genuinely participate. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.